good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar secret societies and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created by me some time ago in order to clear up many of the popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding the secret societies, the Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and, of course, the secret government. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries have been either lost or ignored. You can learn more about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. When you get there, you can sign up for our mailing list and receive our monthly e-news. You can sign up for the 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course. You can become an associate member. You can order books and all kinds of things. So please visit. Now today, if you'd like to call in with questions for our guest, feel free to call our toll-free number, which is 866-472-5795. Before we start today's show, I'd just like to mention about a tour I'll be leading in September with my friend Nancy Safford, who is a high priestess of the Magdalene Mysteries, and she's also a Knight Templar like myself. During this tour, which runs September 20th to the 30th, we're going to be going to many of the places in Southern France and Northern Spain that are associated with the Bloodline Mysteries, the Holy Grail Mysteries, and the Knight Templar Mysteries. We're going to Rennes-le-Château, we're going to Montségur, the great Cathar Temple Fort, we're going to Montserrat, which is famous for a lot of Holy Grail Mysteries, and it's a very powerful vortex in itself, has a very powerful Black Madonna there, St. Marie de la Mer, where Mary Magdalene and some of the other disciples of Jesus landed in France. And throughout this tour, we're going to be doing a lot of ceremonies. We're going to be there during the full moon and the equinox. It'll be a very powerful time. We're also going to have Henry Lincoln, who lives down there, give us a little talk about what's going on, and hopefully we can get a hold of Ben Hammett, who's a famous tomb man who recently found a cave that has a mummy that he believes is that of Mary Magdalene. So he's a very fascinating man. So I think it's going to be a very amazing and pivotal tour, and actually it's really more of a pilgrimage than a tour. So I hope you all can come, and if you're interested, go check out the tour at this website, which is www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, and it'll give you the full schedule, itinerary, and you can register online. Now, today, we're going to be talking about what happened to the Knights Templar after 1307 and in what form they continue to survive today. My guest is the Grand Chancellor of the Knights Templar Organization in Italy, which is known as the OSMTH, which is an abbreviation for a group of Latin words, which in English translate to the Sovereign Military Order of the Temple of Jerusalem. His name is Paolo Nicola Corlini Garampi. Paolo is also a member of many other Initiatic societies, including the Ancient and Primitive Rite of Memphis and Mithraism, the York and Rite and Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the Rosicrucian Organization of Amoric, the Societas Rosicruciana in Lusitania, the Martinist Order, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, and the Order of St. Lazarus. As many of you know, the IOGT and Paolo are co-sponsoring the upcoming World Congress of Initiatic Societies to take place in April 17th in Macerata, Italy. We're calling this Congress the International Conference about the Mission of the Initiatic Societies. During the conference, there'll be many speakers, including myself and Christopher Knight, and we'll be discussing how the Initiatic Societies are linked, what their original purpose was, how they have a common heritage, and how they can be reformed now to keep pace with the world's current evolution. So greetings, Paolo, and welcome back to the Guardians of Holy Grail. Paolo, are you there? Paolo?
Hello, Mark.
There you are.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Yes, great. So you are
okay,
there.
Okay, fine.
Good.
Yes, because the line was not so good.
Okay. So. Well, you're here now. Good. Well, nice to have you back on the show, Paolo.
Thank you.
So you told me recently you had a big gathering of the OSMTH in Rome.
Yes.
What happened during this event?
Yes, I spent 3 days in Sicily for the National Grand Convent, Grand Chapter, that we held every year in Italy. This year also the Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, and Spain came to the gathering. It was a great success, more than 150 Knight Templars and a lot of public, a lot of guests. So we had more than 30 investitures. It was very, very important gathering. There was also the national TV and a lot of conferences, and everything was very good. A lot of work, but I was very happy.
Well, from how I understand your history or the history of the OSMTH is that there was a split along the way. And one branch of OSMTH it became or remained affiliated with Sousa Fontes in Spain, and then the other branch went a different direction. So which branch is OSMTH of Italy a part of?
So the Grand Prior of Italy belonged to the OSMTH International. The headquarters of OSMTH International is in USA. In the beginning, the order was only one, and the origin is goes back until 1705, when the Philippe Duke of Orleans, rebirthed again the order from the darkness. And from that time on, a lot of diplomatic incidents, a lot of problems happened along the way, and until the period of the war, the Second World War, before the Second World War, the archive of the OSMTH were sent to Portugal, and it belonged to the history. Everybody know that. de Sousa Fontes was in charge as Grand Secretary of the Grand Archivist of the Order, because there was the risk during the National Socialism, the Nazism and the Fascism, that every initiatic societies and chivalric order could have been, you know, closed, because it was a danger probably for the national, you know, power. So for avoiding this risk, all the archives were sent to Portugal, because it was a common opinion that Portugal could remain out of the war. But, you know, the Sousa Fontes believed to be in right to, how can I say, to proclaim himself the grand master of this order. And after the end of the conflict, of the war, he refused to give back the archive to the legitimacy. And for this reason, the order split in two branches. The Portuguese part, you know, went on from the Sousa Fontes' father, and he gave the succession to his son, Fernando. And of course, all the other grand priories were, of course, against this decision, because it was not right. In the ancient order, the Grand Master was elected by the other knights. It was not a kind of heritage. And of course, this fact provoked a big split. And from our branch, OSMTH, the succession of the order arrived until now. And around the 98-99, they became, you know, the headquarters was established in the USA. But the Grand Master, the first Grand Master of this modern order, was Sir Roy Redgrave, a Major General, a British man. Very, very wise man. He gave a big impulse, a big push to the order. And the order today is very, very big. You know, we have around the world, we have 14 Grand Priories. The Grand Priories affiliated to OSMTH International is the biggest, of course, is in the United States. Then there is Austria, England and Welsh, Germany, Mexico, Serbia, Bulgaria, Romania, Finland, Greece, NATO, Italy, of course, Canada, France, Norway, Finland, and the other priories are affiliated to us. We are very, very many branches around the world. The important fact is that our order, the OSMTH International, known in USA as SMOTJ, Sovereign Military Order of the Temple of Jerusalem, received the official recognition by United Nations in 2002 as a non-governmental organization affiliated to United Nations. This is very important, because today there are so many false orders, but the only order recognized everywhere in the world is the OSMTH, OSMOTJ, as it's called in USA. This very make clear the situation. So what can I tell you? I am very happy to be a member of this order, because it's very serious. We are going on in legitimacy. Even if today, you know, to state that we are the successors of the old brothers, Knight Templar, is very, you know, difficult, because we don't know if the Carta Transmissionis of Larmenius was true or not. It is said that after the death of Jacques de Molay, the last master of the temple, gave his power and his right to a knight called Jean-Marc Larmenus. And after that, from a grandmaster to another, we arrived until 705, when the Duke of Orléans, declared that the order was again on in the light. But we don't know if this carta is original or not. There are no official proofs. So to proclaim that we are the survivors of the Templar is very, complicated. But we can say clearly and honestly that we are the only order recognized worldwide by United Nations. This is very important from my point of view.
Paolo, do you have any record in the OSMTH? What happened to the Templars between 1307 and 1705 when the Duke of Orléans proclaimed himself the Grand Master?
Well, what I know, because, I did a lot of travels around Europe looking for proofs and, records or documents. What I know, and it is that after the 1307, the Templars had to disappear from the light in Europe because of the persecution, because of the Inquisition, of course, as everybody know. But they didn't disappear. A lot of new orders were created specifically for protecting the original Templars. For example, in Portugal, we know that the Order of Christ was created for protecting them, for making them change name, but they went on inside this order. In Spain, the Order of Montesa, Calatrava, and Alcantara were created for protecting them. In Scotland, the order of Heredom of Kilwinning, the Royal Order of Scotland especially, were created for this purpose. And in Italy, for example, a lot of them were incorporated inside the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, even if officially they never have been, so friends, but the Order of Malta protected them, especially in the highest ranks of the Templar were incorporated inside the Order of Malta. And all over the Europe, a lot of them, went inside religious orders, like the Cistercians, for example, or the Augustinians, or inside other chivalric orders. It was the strategy for surviving, because doing like this, no one king in Europe, no one religious leader could go on persecuting them. They disappeared officially, but not really, from the history, until the 18th century, when the Duke of Orléans stated the Templars are still alive, and I officially open again the history for them. This is what I know. We have a lot of proofs of that.
Right. So, do you think that the Templars, did they survive in France continually from 1307 to 1705?
Yes, I am pretty sure about this, yes, of course. Oh, yes. And also a lot of them entered inside the Rosicrucian movement and inside the Freemasonry, of course. I found, for example, personally, a lot of proofs that the older brethren joined the burning Freemasonry in Europe. We found a lot of proofs of that, a lot of grave slabs, witness this kind of, meeting, because we can find a lot of Masonic symbol together with the Templar symbol on the same grave. And we know for sure this because, for example, in every Masonic rite today, the highest ranks are Templar. They are inspired by the Templar order, and all the leaders, the top ranks of the Masonic rites, and not only the Masonic rites, but also other initiatic societies, are full of Masonic symbolism and inspired to the Masonic history. That this seems to be the only connected to the hero, the Templar as a hero, but not only for that. We know that the ancient builders of the cathedral joined the Templar, the Knight Templars, during the 14th century and even before. For example, I found during many trips to Scotland proofs, and I have a lot of photographs that I will give you when we meet, that the many original Templars joined the first Masons in Scotland. It is very, very evident. So this makes me happy. This is one of the reasons why I'm so much involved into these brotherhoods.
Well, I think that, as you know, our belief in our organization is that the Templars were part of the Johannite tradition that descended from John the Baptist, Jesus, and John the Apostle. It surprises me a little bit that in OSMTH they don't recognize that Johannite heritage, especially considering that one of the modern founders of OSMTH was Bernard Fabre Palaprade. And that's what he said. He said that the Templars were the Johannites. So why do the OSMTH today say that this isn't true?
Well, Mark, I spoke about this with some leaders of OSMTH, like, for example, the former Grand Master and other grand officers of the OSMTH International. The answer was that because of the fact that OSMTH International today is taking care of philanthropic purposes and incorporates also profanes, not only initiated, as we like, for example. And they told me that they have to be super partners, out of the esoteric world. Of course, this makes me, disturb me a little bit. I'm going on taking care of the secretary office of the order, but of course they officially don't want to go too much into the esotericism because they are afraid that the profane world can confuse the OSMTH International with a Masonic brotherhood. This is the reason why they don't want to be too much involved into the esoteric and religious, Essenic, Johannite roots. This is, of course, from my point of view, it is something that I don't like because I like the esoteric way. But this is what I got as answer from them. They told me, Paolo, when you are in your official role, for example, as a Grand Chancellor, please don't talk too much, don't underline too much the esotericism, because from outside we have to be an order open to everyone and not too much connected to the Freemasonry. Of course, everybody can be member, Masons or not Masons, but if we are too much involved into the esoteric roots of the Templars, the profane and can be maybe afraid to become member of this order because I don't know in USA, but here in Europe, because of the Vatican, because of the Catholic Church, when and if an order is too much connected or too close to initiatic ways, like Freemasonry, from their point of view, we are kind of heretics still today. And this is the reason why OSMTH, I believe, want to be super part, not too much, taking care of the esoterism. And this is also one of the reasons why now I'm so happy to have met you in Gregory, in our esoteric connection. This is what I was looking for, and I can tell you that there is a lot of interest and a lot of need to know more our original roots. And it is very evident that the Johannites and the Essenic world is fundamental in the Templar knowledge. But, the official USMTH want to remain a little bit neutral.
Right. I understand that. But still, you must, during your rites, during your ceremonies, isn't there certain esoteric symbolism that is involved with these rites that you perform?
Yes. Part of the rituals. We will talk about this when we meet. There are a lot of symbols, connected to esoteric world. But, we do not emphasize too much because the chapters are open to guests. When we invite guests, of course, and we do not emphasize so much. Of course, when we do chapters, closed only to the members, we take more care about this. But when the chapters are open, we have to remain neutral. This is what has been said from above, from the highest officers of the order.
Well, do you have any levels that the members pass through, and aren't those levels related to the ancient Knight Templars in some way?
You mean during the ceremony?
Well, within the OSMTH, do you have levels that? Well, obviously you do. You're Grand Chancellor. There's the Grand Prior, and there's different levels.
The ranks. We start as a squire, and sergeant, and then knight or dame, of course, then officer of the commandery. Then commander can be a commander with a function to lead the commandery or only a rank. Then bailiff, then grand bailiff, then become a member of the grand council, and you become grand officer with different functions. And then grand prior. Every 3 years, there are elections, and we elect or not, or we confirm the Grand Prior. These are the ranks in OSMTH. Sometimes we make exception. For example, when the candidate to become member of OSMTH is a particular candidate, with a certain knowledge about the order of the temple, is an initiated, for example, a mason or a knight from another order, we can, invest him directly as a knight, jumping the two first ranks of squire and sergeant. But these are exception only when it is the right case.
And the members, when they come together, when they meet, you talk about charities that you're going to give to, something like what the Freemasons do. But don't you do any kind of special ceremony or anything has kind of an esoteric nature to it?
Yes, it is very similar to what happened inside the lodge. because we, of course, there is the ritual for entering inside the commandery and the opening ceremony, and the commander may, do the ritual. And then every time one brother make a speech, one specific essay about esoteric or historic matters connected to the Templars, of course. And after that, the other brothers ask the commander the right to talk, and the commander give his okay, the right to talk to the brothers, and everybody can, can add something on the essay of the brother who spoke. And this is very similar to what happened inside the Masonic Lodge. After that, the commander, makes the final conclusions, and after that we collect some money for the charity, for the philanthropy, and then we make we close the ceremony, and we finish the evening with a dinner, ritual dinner, or not ritual, depends if we accept a guest or not. This is basically one standard ceremony.
So if the members want to have more of a mystical experience, they essentially need to be part of a different order. Is that right?
Yes, this is the normal routine. But sometimes we do also chapters only for members without guests. And when we do this, we go a little bit more deep into the esotericism, esoteric matters. But of course not when the chapters are open to everyone, because of the risk to be confused with a Masonic rite. Even if from my side I can tell you that I would like so much, but we have to behave neutral,
So there are times that you get more deeper into the esotericism and the mysticism. At those times, are the members able to have a kind of a mystical experience?
No, inside the SMPH International, there is not this kind of possibility. This is the reason why most of us are involved inside other initiatic orders or Masonic orders.
You're a member of a number of different organizations. Are there any of them that really can give you more a good deep mystical experience?
Yes, of course. And I entered inside several orders because I consider this as a great possibilities to add a new part, new cell on a big puzzle of the knowledge. And in every order where I became member, I got something. And of course I want, because I know that the knowledge is endless, and I want to know. I'm really looking for light. So entering inside several order, I got a good point, a good good part of knowledge from all of these orders. And so I'm very grateful to this kind of different path, because we have so much to learn. And this I believe that in the air, one special energy made you and me join in energy. And I hope, I'm very much looking forward to meet you personally.
Well, me also, Paul. But the other orders that you can have a deeper mystical experience that are more esoteric, what is their heritage? Where did they say they got their esoteric rites from? Where did they come from?
Yes, of course, here in Europe, the roots, the common roots of the almost all the esoteric orders, Masonic or non-Masonic, are into the Egypt, ancient Egypt, or Sumerian, Mesopotamic world, in Middle East, specifically. but most of them from ancient Egypt and Sumerian and Syro-Babylonese, this part of the, you know, the Middle East. All the other orders, you know, take inspiration from these countries and these histories.
So you get your rites from way back to Babylonian and Sumerian times. It seems to me as though a lot of those rituals and the esoteric understanding of Sumerian and Babylonia has been lost over time, hasn't it?
Yes, I think so.
So that there's some remaining that you still study in these orders.
Yes, we study very often the, for example, the Iranic ritualities, also the Mithraism, for example, the Mazdaism, and also the Kabbalistic world, and you know, the Sumerian rituals, what we can, you know, find, because it is not so easy. A lot of these books, sacred books, have been lost. Are lost because a lot of these documents are, you know, destroyed during the wars, and other kind of documents were, you know, destroyed, disappeared. But we can still find something. And the esoteric order, the most famous, important esoteric order, went into this route for finding, you know, rituals and knowledge. For example, the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis is very, very, very rich of rituals and esotericism and mysticism. And also the Sufism. We study a lot of the Sufis. The Sufi world is very close to our mystic way.
And that's and you study the Sufi teachings in the Memphis and Mizraim order, is that right?
Also, yes. The Sufism is very much, you know, studied. But I told you, the most rich of the Masonic order, from my point of view, talking about mysticism, is the Memphis and Mizraim. But if we talk about the Rosicrucian roots, there are other... In other order, is very much, you know, studied. Like, for example, the ancient, the Scottish Rite, the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, and also inside the York, Rite of York, specifically on the third level of the Rite of York, called the Grand Commandery of the Knight Templars, we study a lot of, you know, symbolism and mysticism that come from, you know, from the Middle East, specifically from the Kabbalistic world.
The Rite of Memphis and Mizraim is a fairly recent, fairly new organization, maybe a couple hundred years old, isn't it?
Yes, you know, before it was split in three or four separated rites. 200 years ago, more or less, they joined together in only one rite. And also inside the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis and Mizraim, there are different, you know, parts. Because, you know, the human beings are very, you know, particular, you know. When a grandmaster became so big, and other people, small in spirit, want to become boss, and they take part of the brothers, and they create another order. This is a very common disease. You know, in my profound life, I'm a doctor. It is very common disease, the hypertrophic ego. So for this reason, the two or three different rites of Memphis and Mizraim have been created. But the original one is one. The original is only one. The knowledge is one. The human being want to be separated, but the light is one and is for everyone.
Well, of course, most of the Egyptian wisdom is in the papyrus scrolls and hieroglyphics. And a lot of that was translated into Greek during the time of Alexandria. So can Memphis and Mizraim organization trace its roots back to Alexandria then?
Yeah, it is said so. I don't know. I never saw the original, you know, documents. But the tradition goes back to Alexandria Bibliothek. You know that the Alexandria Bibliothek has been, you know, burned, and almost all the books have disappeared. But something has been, you know, saved by the Greeks, by a lot of important Greek, and preserved there, but not so much. Anyway, I found this rite the most, you know, deep into esotericism. And this rite will come to our gathering, to our international conference. The Grand Master of the rite will come himself.
Wow, fantastic. Well, that'll be an honor to have him there, that's for sure.
We will have a chance to talk to him.
Excellent. So these other organizations that have lost their mysticism, they've lost their esotericism, do the brothers want to have more of a mystical experience? Do they want those organizations to become more mystical again?
Yes, yeah, there is a lot of, you know, interest, and how can I say, the members are very much angry and thirsty about knowledge, you know, because sometimes people enter inside these orders, but they don't find so often what they are looking for. This is the reason why the esoterists want to enter in more than one rite, because you can get part of what you are looking for in one order, and another part in another order. But there is the need here in Europe, I don't know in USA, but probably, I think so, to know more, because we are going towards one very dark period. And from this point of view, I believe that our initiative to do this event, this international conference, is very, very appropriate. I think this is the right time now to do something for the future.
Well, as I think we've talked about before, Paolo, my belief is that to create the Gnostic civilization of the future, there has to be a balance of the male and female energies on the planet, and right now we have to revive the female energies. And when we revive them within all of us, that gives us, that inspires us to have more of the mystical experience. Like the male parts are totally happy being intellectual, but the female parts want to have more of the mystical experience. And so what's happening is all these brothers in all these different initiatic societies are starting to revive the female principle. They want the mystical experience. They want something deeper. And so the question stands, is how do we do this? Is it possible to reinfuse the initiatic societies with more mysticism, or do we have to start totally new organizations, new orders that are more mystical? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand what you say. Yeah. Yes, I think so. In the, not so often. Inside, for example, the initiatic orders, we talk about the sacred feminine, for example. Of course, sometimes, especially, I told you, in Egyptian rite, we talk about Osiris and Isis, and in both ways, but not in all rites. For example, in Italy, most of the Masonic order are only for men. There is only one Grand Lodge in Italy open to men and women, but most of the Freemasonry is open only to a men. And this is very bad. I believe that, yes, we have to open the eyes to many people, that today there is the need to promote this kind of you know, vision where the male and women are complementary, as it is in nature. And I think you are very right when you talk about this. I agree totally on this vision. Of course, we need to go slowly, because, you know, there is the habit. Disorder are going on, you know, only from a masculine point of view. It takes time to make understand, but we have to find the key to open mind and heart, you know, and the sensibility to this future vision, that where the men and women are both important and connected in only one entity.
So do you believe that the grand priors of the other organizations are open-minded to the idea of integrating more females into their orders?
I have to be very honest. You know, we have to be very careful. When we will hold the conference, there will be almost 15 representative, or grandmaster, or their representative, right-hand men of important order. Most of them are only for men since a century. But I believe that one vision, enlightened vision, as you, Sir Ian, and Christopher, with your conferences, and especially when you will talk about the mission of Gnostic Templars, I believe that they are enough open to listen and to meditate about this plan. I cannot, you know, promise that they, for example, will change so much to open the doors to the women immediately, but minimum, I believe that they will be much more available to integrate, for example, female tradition and rights inside the order, even if not opening immediately the membership. But I think that it will be a very good step in order to make them understand this kind of need.
And yes, so,
find
what would
the
you
good,
say?
The good, you know, strategy to make them understand.
What would you say was the main reason there the Grand Masters, the Grand Priors are attending this conference? Is the main reason to find out what the original purpose was of the Initiatic Societies? Is it to find out how we were all connected at some point, how we're connected to the Gnostic alchemical path? Or is it all these things?
No, everybody, because, you know, I explained it very well to every one of them, the vision, you know, the purpose of this conference. They all are very, very interested in knowing more about the 5 points of the Gnostic Templars and this future vision of the Enlightenment. They are very much looking forward to hearing more about this. You know, they come because they are curious, they want to know more, because it is a new, you know, a new starting point. And I believe that they are very available in listening and opening their heart and mind on this mission. I'm very, very much sure about this.
Well, the way I see it, and I imagine you do as well, is this is the very beginning. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You can't do it all in one conference. So I see this as the beginning of perhaps a series of conferences that we gradually work to bring the Initiatic Societies together and to help to reform them, help to make the changes within them that they need to make. And I see that this happening over a number of years, a number of conferences, maybe one a year. I imagine you probably see it the same way.
Yes, exactly. I agree with you totally, yes. I have the same vision about this. You know, it will take time to make change something, but we have to start. And I agree on this point. This is the right moment, because, you know, it is very strange. It is almost a miracle that all of these orders and Masonic rite accepted to be together, seated around the table, because we will make a crown of table around you, Sir Ian and Christopher. And in the afternoon, they will talk. They will say something about what you say in the morning. But when I spoke to them, when I asked them to come, they all were so much grateful for this initiative. So I believe that there will be a good atmosphere and good energy for, making them feel the need that this is the era where we have to change vision. It will take time, but I'm very, very much optimistic about the future. It's up to us to make them understand in a proper way, without hurting, their, personality, without asking too much to change immediately, but giving with all our heart our experience, your experience, and your vision of this future enlightenment. I believe that they are available to understand and to do something for the future in order to get more together than in the past. Because in the past, every one of these order has been working separately, talking apparently that they are doing the same thing, but everyone is thinking for himself. This is the good step, again, the right moment to make them understand that we all are working for the same purpose, and that we have to get together more, work together in synergy, in parallel. I think so.
Well, there's certainly an energy that's through which you and I met that is bringing us all together right now. Of course. In different cultures, they're talking about this being a period leading into the new era, the new age, the golden age, whatever you want to call it. So I'm wondering, do the grand masters and the grand priors of these different organizations, do they believe we're headed for a new era, a new age?
Yes, I think so. I think so, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean... When you look at what's happening, between us and with them and the conference, you can't deny that there is some energy that's moving us towards a major shift, a major transformation that's bringing us all together. Yeah.
Yes. So I believe that as we felt this invisible energy who joined us, made us join in this. Connection. I believe that all the others can feel the same, because when the energy is so strong, when the motivation, when the push, the inner push is so strong, I believe that the hearts of people can feel directly straight to their hearts. And I hope that for them will happen the same happened to me when we got in contact, you and me together. And I'm very, I told you, I'm very optimistic, because I felt the feeling of this chief of Initiatic Society. They are very much counting down the days before the event. So they are very much waiting and looking forward to meeting you all and all of us to the conference. I believe a ring of energy will be created in this event.
I'm sure I'll be very, very humbled in speaking to an audience full of grand priors and initiates.
Don't worry, because they all are, coming with all their joy. They are very much, I told you, anxious to come to participate, and a lot of them will remain also on Sunday when we will do the esoteric tour of the Sanctuary of Loreto, where the Black Madonna and the House of Maria was brought by the Templar from Holy Land. A lot of chiefs of the orders and the Masonic Rite will remain with us. We'll do the tour together. so we will have more time to share together. And I believe that the energy that we start on Saturday will go on Sunday too. And this is, will be a good start. I believe that the future will be, you know, more bright after this event.
Well, it's all very exciting, and I'm I'm counting the days too, with a lot of excitement and a little bit of nervousness and a little bit of dread, but I'm definitely excited about it.
Yes, we all do.
Anyway,
maybe Mark. Also, I don't know if you know some. I believe so, but anyway, if you know the White Brotherhood,
the Grey White Brotherhood, of course, yes.
Benza, Peter Dunov, Ivanov. Also, maybe the Italian representative of this Brotherhood will come.
Oh well, that would be wonderful. Yeah, because
White Brotherhood of Ivanov.
Well, that would be fabulous, yeah, because certainly the Templars had a connection with the Great White Brotherhood.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so it is important.
I wouldn't surprise me if Saint Germain showed up. I mean, it's like everybody's coming to this, so it's great.
Anyway, I can tell you very briefly, at the moment, the symbolic rite will come, the ancient and primitive rite of Memphis and Mizraim, the Grand Master, the Scottish regime rectified that come from the strict observance of the Templars created by Carl von Hund, the chief for Italy, will come, the rite of York with the Royal Arch, the cryptic mason, the Grand Commandery of the Knight Templar, the Rite of York, will come. The ancient Rite of Noachiti will come. The Order of the Rosy Cross of Costantino will come. The Philalet Society. The Grand Prior of SMTH Italy. The representative of Lakota Sikangu of Rosebud will come. And the Prior of Romania of SMTH will come, and the White Brotherhood. So they are not bad, huh? Not bad.
Not bad, no. It'll be such a thrill to meet all these people. So you've just done a phenomenal job in organizing this, and I can't thank you enough. It's really been amazing what you've done. And so I know it's going to be a huge success. And, of course, for everybody listening,
I'm doing my best, Mark. I'm very much, you know, excited about this mission. I'm doing my very best for that.
You've done better than your very best, I think. You've done just amazing and just phenomenal.
We will see if it will be a success. But anyway, I put all my energy in making this event become a success. And I will be very happy and honored to welcome you and Sir Ian and Christopher in Italy. We will do our best for making this event remain unforgettable, I hope.
Yeah, well, I can see you're definitely doing that. And for those people out in the listening audience, this is a free conference. If you can find a way to get over to Macerata, Italy by... for April 17th, you're free to come and join us. So it's going to be a real pivotal event, as you can hear. So it's going to be amazing. And thank you so much for being on our show today, Paolo. You very lucidly and articulately described the OSMTH and as well as the conference. So I really appreciate having you on today.
I've been very happy to participate. Thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to embracing you as my brother.
Me also.
Hi.
Okay, well, we'll be seeing you very soon, Paolo.
Hi, okay. Well, you are more than welcome. I wait for you with my open heart.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye for now. So next week on the show, we have an author named Kevin Guest, and he wrote a book called The Secrets of Solomon's Temple, which is very intriguing about, how it was made and
all the esoteric dimensions that were incorporated into it and all the various realms and so forth and so on. So it's going to be a very fascinating show, and you're not going to want to miss it. And so until then, have a joyous and wonderful week. And always remember that if you're looking for the Holy Grail, all you have to do is look right inside of you. It's always there. Okay, bye for now.